Chapter 18. Davin whittled his newest carving, the motions almost unconscious. What is happening to me? He paused for a moment to regard the burned imprints of the eternal flame on his palms. It had all started after the ceremony in the Flame Cathedral, but he wasn't sure. The strange ability to carve came after that, but the preternatural ability to sense, to think, to act with unusual quickness had come before then. When he had survived the onslaught of Dale's martyr, he had considered himself lucky. When he had dropped the three fleeing assassins from their horses, he credited his own skill and extraordinary, unbelievable luck. But what had happened last night was completely different. Somehow he had sensed that danger was close, just as a deer might raise its head because it smells something off or hears an unexpected sound. He had seen it 100 times on his hunting trips in the wild when stalking prey. But none of his usual senses had registered anything out of the ordinary. He just knew that something bad had arrived at Lady Hightower's door. And then his carving had leapt from the staircase onto the robber's neck and tore out his artery. Davin had removed the sabre cat from the scene before the city watch came, and he and Lady Hightower agreed to leave that little detail out of the report when the sheriff came to interview them all a while later. Just an unfortunate stab of his knife, they told him. The Lady Hightower had retired immediately to comfort a visibly shaken Elaine, and Davin provided the shockingly young sheriff with the rest of the details. Thankfully, the chirurgeon tasked with sewing a few stitches into his head had some grey hair. The sheriff promised to send a couple of men in the morning to guard the place against further attack, but Davin wasn't content to return to the inn and leave the house unguarded. He had fetched his gun and sat on the front steps to watch the night through. He had barely sat 5 minutes when a little piece of wood, part of a broken branch beneath a nearby elm, called to him. When the shapes had first started appearing in the wood, he thought his mind had started to fail him. Everywhere he went, a fallen branch or a plank of wood would transform before his eyes into something else. From time to time, he could even sense to whom the objects would belong. As soon as he had met Elaine Brighton, he knew the sabre cat was hers. The lifelike figurine of Lord Ember in his bag was to go to Lord Ember, which seemed silly. Why would he want a carving of himself? And he knew that the nearly finished rosebud pendant in his hand would go to the Viscountess Ariane Hightower. He hadn't even needed light to carve it. The skill had come without any work or study. It was as if someone else's hands were attached to his body. He stared at the rosebud, smoothing the edges with his carving knife. How he would give the gift to a lady without seeming incredibly forward was something he had yet to figure out. She probably already thought him an oddity that attracted trouble to her household. Still, she had been kind. If more of the nobles would have been like her, he might not have avoided court so assiduously during his days as Baron Carver. She was as pretty as a spring blossom to boot. He chastised himself for the stray thought and blew the dust and wood curls off the rosebud. He had killed her husband. And now that he knew what kind of a woman she was, he felt more guilty for it than ever. Why hadn't he thought of her before issuing his challenge? Emile was all that had occupied his mind then, and he cursed himself for his short-sightedness. At least now he had some chance to offer restitution by keeping her safe and seeing her through the odd ordeal of her ledgers. The light had just started to conquer the dark for good as he twirled the rose pendant between his thumb and forefinger. He inspected its curves and the delicate stem. It was a perfection. He still couldn't believe how easy it was. The roughly patched-up door to the manor house creaked and squealed angrily, and Davin turned, surprised to find a puffy-eyed Lady Hightower wrapped in a shawl striding toward his place on the stair. Davin stood and bowed. She appeared out of sorts, eyes hard, and he hoped nothing bad had happened inside the house. "Mr. Harper," she exclaimed, "am I to understand that you've been out here all night long? I thought you had returned to the inn." He wiped bits of wood off of his coat and pants, returning the knife to his carving pouch. "I'm sorry to distress you, Lady Hightower. The sheriff said he would send men this morning to watch over the house, and I didn't want to leave you unprotected overnight, in case of some further villainy." She came uncomfortably close and pushed his hat back to get a look at the wound on his forehead, inspecting it for a few moments before stepping away. "Well, you look a mess, and I could have, should have sent some of the other men in my house to watch so you could rest." Davin exhaled. Don't worry, Viscountess. I should still be fit enough to spend a few hours at the ledgers today. She returned an angry look. I wasn't concerned that you wouldn't be able to get to the ledgers for the flame's sake. You were injured. She put her hands on her hips and looked out toward the grounds. I love Hightower. I want it to be a place where everyone can feel safe and welcome and warm. And it has been nothing but a house of horrors for you. If it's not my mother insulting you for hours, then it's me whipping you to look at the ledgers. And then someone attacks you. It's all been so irregular and unexpected. Davin didn't consider himself the least bit knowledgeable in terms of women and their emotions, especially after his failure to read Emile, but the Lady Hightower was on the verge of tears. He knew Elaine was terrified. He now understood that the more composed Lady Hightower felt the same, and was dealing with it by berating herself over petty points of hospitality. Her eyes started to water as she finished her diatribe against herself. While nothing could atone for his killing of her husband, he could at least offer her help now. Lady Hightower, he said, you have treated me far better than I deserve. It's been a beastly time for you, but I assure you that I'll do everything in my power to guarantee that you and Elaine come to no further harm. Her eyes started to water again, and she turned away briefly, rubbing them. I hardly slept at all last night, so my eyes feel like they have sand in them. I thank you for your commitment, Mr. Harper, but as I recall, I wasn't asking for your protection. I was pointing out that I set a high standard of hospitality for Hightower, and I regret that you have yet to enjoy it. She mastered her emotions, exhaling and rubbing her arms against the cold. So you've been carving something? Some other beast to guard my house? Well, here it goes. He opened his palm. As with Elaine, he could see the possessive spark in Ariane's eyes. It was more than amazement or appreciation. It was as if something in them recognized that the carving belonged to them. Without asking, she removed it from his extended hand. This is exquisite, and look, it even has a little loop for a chain. At that moment, the first rays of dawn broke above the horizon, falling upon them both. The rosebud unfolded and welcomed the light, expanding in Lady Hightower's hand. She gasped in wonderment, and Davin's eyes went wide. It was a perfect simulacrum of a rose without the colours. Wafer-thin petals caught the rays, blushing their tips a soft pink. While in appearance delicate, the petals did not bend as the Viscountess probed them reverently. She held it for many moments, speechless. Mr. Harper, this is a treasure, a marvellous treasure. She looked at him for a moment, eyes widening. Let me see your palms. Davin extended them obediently, knowing what she would find. She nodded. You are one of the flame-touched. Is this your gift? She asked, studying the rose. I think so, though I hardly know what to make of it. I have many questions for Lord Ember when I return to Belshire. He didn't remember living carvings on the list of gifts Lord Ember had spoken of before the ceremony. Lady Hightower continued to admire the carving for several moments before returning her attention to him. Come in, and we'll get you a warm bath and some fresh clothes. After a good breakfast, you will sleep, and later we will talk about what to do about our precarious situation. These were commands, her tone indicating she would brook no debate. Thank you for your kindness, Lady Hightower. You are welcome. She started toward the house, rose in hand, before abruptly turning back to Davin. I'm sorry, Mr. Harper. I've absconded with your carving. It is finished. Why don't you hold on to it for me? It wasn't quite the same as gifting it to her, and he hoped she would feel more comfortable. By her smile she was pleased, and Davin was glad such a simple thing could distract her from her troubles. I will find a chain for it immediately, she said. I know the very one. I will be the envy of everyone. As they passed into the dark of the entryway, the flower closed again, to the delight of the Viscountess. Elaine came down the stairs moments later. She had refused to sleep without the sabre cat in her room. Garvis had diligently cleaned it for her, though the blood had stained it an uneven maroon colour on one side. She clutched it next to her chest and embraced her sister. Look what else Mr. Harper has carved. The next few moments Davin enjoyed the bright eyes and smiles of the women as they walked in and out of the light to watch the rosebud open and close. Whatever purpose his gift might have, at the very least it seemed to astonish and gladden the recipients, and as far as gifts went, he supposed it a good one. He just wished every piece of serviceable wood he came across would quit transforming itself before his eyes. "Mr. Harper here is a bit more extraordinary than he lets on," Ariane continued. "He is flame-touched." Elaine's eyes widened. "May I see?" Davin extended his hands again, and she tentatively prodded the mark before turning back to Ariane. "He could be Lord Ember some day. The Queen will certainly knight him after this, too. You will be a noble, Mr. Harper. Sir Harper. What do you think of that?"
Davin felt a bit uncomfortable. Under no circumstances did he want to return to court. "It sounds a bit grand for someone like me, young miss. I think I could use that bath more than a title at the moment."
The warm bath nearly paralysed Davin with comfort, and after a quick scrub, Garvis trimmed his beard and hair. Another manservant knocked and reported that the sheriff's men had arrived. Davin relaxed and felt so warm and woozy afterward that he declined breakfast and retired to bed directly. Garvis returning with lunch, a sliced apple and a bowl of steaming potato soup, woke him. Davin ate slowly, clearing the fog from his head with effort. He could hear laughter and the happy tones of Elaine and Ariane, not the sombre mood he had expected from two women terrorized just the day before. The door opened and Garvis entered with familiar saddlebags.
"Lady Ariane had these fetched from the inn for you. Do you have some clothes you can wear, or shall I try to find some for you around the house?"
"I've some in the bags, thank you, Garvis," he answered.
"You're welcome, and Mr. Harper. The ladies would like to see you soon. They've discovered something rather extraordinary about those carvings of yours. They're in the drawing room."
Curiosity piqued, Davin dressed quickly and headed downstairs. Lady Hightower, Elaine, and Missa all sat in the drawing room, faces bright. The rose, fully bloomed, hung from a copper chain encircling Lady Hightower's milky white neck, and she fingered it absent-mindedly. The sabre cat sat, curled like a house cat, on Elaine's lap. The ledgers awaited on the desk.
"Good afternoon, ladies," he said, bowing before making his way to his work. "I am sorry I slept so long."
"You deserved it, Mr. Harper," Lady Hightower said. "Come here for a moment. We have something to show you."
All three of the women grinned knowingly at him, and he felt uneasy. Lady Hightower stood and came toward him, stopping just in front of him.
"Watch this, Mr. Harper."
She concentrated for a moment, closing her eyes, and the rosebud closed. She did it again, and it bloomed.
"You can control it?" he asked, astonished.
"Yes."
She moved to stand beside him and threaded her arm through his. He froze and had to exert all his concentration to keep from trembling. She was warm and smelled of lavender. Her touch felt like coming in out of the cold and standing by a roaring fire, both inviting and uncomfortable. He swallowed hard. How long had it been since anyone had touched him in a familiar, friendly manner?
"Your turn, Elaine," Ariane prompted.
Elaine concentrated for a moment, and the rigid form of the sabre cat turned lithe. It cast its gaze quickly about and then leaped from Elaine's lap to the dark of recess under the couch.
"It seems to have a life of its own," Lady Hightower explained. "But she can also command it. Show him, Elaine."
Elaine stared intently at the carving for a moment, and the wooden sabre cat sprinted from under the couch to stand in front of Davin and bow in deference. Davin used the opportunity to break Ariane's lock on his arm and stoop down, extending his hands. At Elaine's behest, the figurine obediently crawled up and sat on its haunches on his palms. Davin rose again, and Lady Hightower discomfited him by latching back onto his arm.
"But Mr. Harper," Lady Hightower said, studying his face, "it appears you didn't enjoy our little demonstration."
The sabre cat suddenly jumped down and hopped across the furniture and tables until it snuggled up on Elaine's lap. He was flummoxed and pulled away from Lady Hightower, seeking refuge at the desk.
"I don't know what to say, Lady Hightower. I hope my strange gift doesn't cause trouble for you."
"Mr. Harper," she laughed, "you are incorrigible. The only trouble you have caused is a bit of jealousy. This is delightful." "Do smile," Elaine joined in. "This is the most wonderful thing that has ever happened to me."
Lady Hightower returned to her seat.
"How does it work, Mr. Harper?"
"You'll think I'm mad," he warned,
absent-mindedly arranging the papers and books on the desk.
"I just see shapes in the wood, like that pile of brush out there. I can see a stick that will make two candles, one for Missa there and one for Garvis."
Missa's face lit up.
Lady Hightower asked.
You mean that you know whom the carvings are for beforehand?
Usually, yes.
So you knew this rosebud was for me when you saw the shape in the wood?
Davin nodded. With Elaine, however, I didn't know until I met her.
Fascinating. Missa, fetch Garvis. We need to bring that stick here for Mr. Harper.
Davin objected. Shouldn't I be about the ledgers, Lady Hightower?
Of course, but you said we needed to discuss how to act next. And we can do that while you carve. Would you like to sit in the garden and speak with me while you carve?
That would be fine, Lady Hightower.
Can I come?
Elaine asked hopefully.
No, dear, Ariane answered. There are delicate matters Mr. Harper and I need to attend to. We'll call for you when we are done.
She pouted, but Ariane didn't give way. They left the house through a rear entrance to the green garden filled with vibrant colours. The day was breezy and pleasant, round puffy clouds slipping through the sky and the air just cool enough to make the sunshine desirable. Garvis brought chairs for them both, and Davin arranged them to keep Lady Hightower out of sight from anyone that might be watching from the nearby woods. After a few miscues as to the proper stick, Davin retrieved his knife and began to whittle a little self-consciously, as the Lady Hightower looked on, face expectant. He simply wasn't used to having someone pay attention to him do anything. But his gift didn't fail him. His hands knew where to cut and groove and shape. Thankfully, the lady leaned back and inspected a red creeper vine for a moment before turning her attention back to him.
Before I ask for your thoughts, she began, I wanted to inform you that I sent two letters this morning, one to Queen Philippa and one to my mother, relating last night's events. When the sheriff's two men came this morning, they told me that both my steward and my clerk had fled. No one's seen either man since late last night, when their families said they packed and left suddenly. Certainly guilty behaviour. Do you think I am still in danger, Mr. Carver?
Davin stopped for a moment and regarded her. A fragrant breeze rustled her dark hair, and her blue eyes were penetrating and deep. Davin realised he was staring and opened his mouth quickly. I've been giving it some thought, and I believe that, yes, you are probably in more danger now.
She was surprised. Why?
Clearly the ledgers contain something criminal. Now, the man sent last night was a common thug. Cheap, coarse, and stupid. The kind of man found quickly and by someone of little means. If your clerk and your steward have been pocketing £2,000 a year for at least 3 years, they would be quite well to do. Apparently, however, she sat up straight.
They haven't been keeping the money.
Precisely. They are working for someone else. And my guess is that that person is probably someone of substance. When people of substance want something illegal done, they can find someone much more skilled than a tavern dog to do their dirty work. I fear that when such a person gets word that the ledgers are exposed, then Hightower will not be safe. Her eyes turned hard.
Should I hire men? Keep a thick guard about the grounds?
Davin returned to whittling without even thinking about it. I apologize if my carving seems disrespectful. I don't even realize I'm doing it. Hiring a guard might be useful, but the real solution is to get the ledgers out of Hightower as quickly as possible, and to make that fact public. I should do it.
You'll make yourself a target, Mr. Harper. I won't have it, she disagreed firmly.
It makes sense, Lady Hightower. I may wear the clothes of a common clerk, but I am experienced in the wilderness. I'll drop word in a couple of local taverns that I have the ledgers. I'll leave in the middle of the night and stay off the road. No one will be able to find me. I can slip into Bellshire and get the ledgers to Mr. Lambert and the Lord High Sheriff. She leaned forward, eyes cold and voice hard.
Now listen to me, Mr. Harper. Everyone knows I'm a friend of the Queen, and they will know that I would send the ledgers to Bellshire to be examined. You may be able to play your little game of hide-and-seek in the woods, but the conspirators will know where you are going. Why is she so angry about this idea?
Davin wondered. It made perfect sense to him. Then he guessed what might be troubling her.
I understand that you would like to know what's in these ledgers first, in case it is damaging to Hightower and to yourself. I can assure you, however, that Mr. Lambert and the sheriff will be as discreet as I am. You can get an armed escort to Bellshire a day or two after I leave.
Her head began to shake about halfway through his argument.
He had guessed wrong. No, Mr. Harper. I cannot have you come here, pass through abuse and peril, and then leave with a gun pointed at your head. It isn't right. It would be improper and beneath my sense of gentility.
Sense of gentility? Davin really didn't understand.
Lady Hightower, I assure you that I have a very high opinion of Hightower and of you.
This is simply not a matter of propriety. It is what needs to be done to keep you and Miss Brighton safe. Suddenly, it occurred to him what to say. I am a commoner and a clerk. It is an honour that one as lowly as I can serve and protect a noblewoman and friend of the Queen. She seemed appalled, and stood, regarding him with flinty eyes. It hadn't been the right thing to say, after all. I absolutely refuse to put you in danger in this way, Mr. Harper. Refuse, mind you. I will hire men. You will stay here, decipher what you can of the ledgers, and when it is time, you and I will travel together under heavy guard to Belshire. The matter is closed. He had no thought to reply. She stormed into the house before he could think of anything anyway. He exhaled, perplexed. She was more concerned about the ledgers becoming public than he realized, and obviously wasn't thinking clearly. Of course, her nerves were raw from the disturbing events of the last few days. Another hour in the garden would see the candles carved and likely a more settled Lady Hightower. He would try to reason with her again then. Whatever she commanded, he would do what was necessary to keep her and her sister safe. I'll miss this place, he thought wistfully to himself, as the wood shavings fell in rapid succession. It was the first time in months he hadn't thought of Frostbourne.